हरिः ॐ सहनावावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रीअद्वैतगदाधर श्रीवासरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 44. As it is imperative to abandon the desire for bhakti, it is equally important to abandon the desire for mukti. Five kinds of mukti are mentioned in the scriptures, Srimad Bhagavatam 3:29-13. A pure devotee does not accept any kind of liberation, salokya, sharshti, samipya, sarupya, or ekatva, even though they are offered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Through salokya mukti, one attains a residence in the abode of Bhagavan. To obtain opulence equal to that of Bhagavan is sharshti mukti. To attain a position in proximity to Bhagavan is called samipya mukti. To obtain a forearm form like that of Bhagavan is called swarupya mukti. To attain sayuja mukti, merging, is called ekatva. This sayuja mukti is of two types, brahma sayuja and ishvara sayuja. The cultivation of Brahma-gyan leads one to Brahma-sayuja. By properly observing the Patanjali Yoga system, one attains the liberation Ishvara-sayuja, or merging into the Lord's form. Shuddha-bhakti never resides in the hearts of those who consider Sayuja-mukti to be the ultimate perfection. Although these five types of liberation are worthy of rejection by the devotees, the four types of Salokya, Sharshti, Samipya, Sarupya are not completely averse to bhakti. Means the positions aren't, but that's your focus, then that's not considered as ideal. Right? Because you're thinking, if I'm on the same planet, I'm the same opulence or close or have the same form, then there's some benefit for ourselves, even though it's in connection with the Lord. Right, so that's why then the idea in Braja Bhakti is that it's just about pleasing Krishna. It's not about these other benefits that we may have for us. Yes.
So we can't say it's a prayojana in itself for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas.
No. It's just something that happens. So for us, it's just a situation where it just like means being liberated, being off the material platform, that just happens because of bhakti. It's just a side effect. So that one has a suitable form, one's in a suitable proximity for the service, one's therefore in the same place, one has this suitable facilities and all that, then those just happen by the arrangement of Yoga Maya, but it's not something that we're trying for.
Yeah. I'm asking because many devotees actually think that it is that getting this kind of. Of course, Vaishnava liberation, it is a prayojana. Especially, after they read Ishopanishad, that's the conclusion most everybody comes to.
Vedic Sanskrit.
Yeah, Vedic Sanskrit, and it's not clear. I mean, it is clear, but it's not...
But they check the purports?
Yeah. it's not prominent, let's say it like that.
The point is that there's the idea to go back to Godhead. That just means you qualify yourself to be in that position where you're qualified to serve the Lord eternally as opposed to being distracted here.
Right.
But it's not about being there. It's about the service. That's why you see is that because these things are supposed to be seen from the perspective of Bhagavatam. So even we're looking at the Upanishads, that's going to be presenting. But it still has to be seen in that context. Just like we see is that Mahabharat, that as a devotee, then we see Mahabharat, we see it in one context. But if we weren't a devotee, we'd see it in a very different context. Right? So than the first canto, how Vyasadeva presents Mahabharata there, in that context of Krishna's pastimes, then we see it very nicely brought out. Right? So from that, then you view the others, then it's fine. But to view one thing on its own, that'll always create a problem. You know, you read the commentaries of the Acharyas, and one is saying in one way, someone is saying in another way. But they're bringing out various aspects of the one absolute truth. And so then, if we're looking at the secondary platform, then we'll see that there's a difference. And then there'll always be confusion and everything like that. So that's why it says don't read too many books. You know, Prabhupada's books are there, read those, stick to those purports. If by reading other beyond that you're able to see it in that context, then that's fine. But if you can't, then better not to read it. You know? Is that, yeah. According to the difference in a particular devotee's eligibility to receive them, these four types of bhakti assume two forms. Swasuka Aishwarya, Pradan Kari, that which bestows transcendental happiness and opulence, and Prema Seva Pradan Kari, that which bestows loving transcendental service unto Bhagavan. Those who reach the Vaikuntha planets through these four types of liberation attain the fruit of transcendental happiness and opulence. Servitors or devotees of the Lord never accept such liberation under any circumstance. Right? Because it's not about transcendental happiness and opulence. Because that may be the things you want to go back to God, because you're out of here, you'll be happy, you'll be this and that. These are just ideas so that one brings one to look at that. But when you actually see what's the cause of that, then it's about Krishna. That's why then you see this Braja Bhakti is very rare. Right? So when it says Lord Chaitanya is given something never given before, this is what it's talking about. Right? It's talking about that it's about pleasing Krishna. The Premi Bhaktis never accept any one of the five varieties of mukti. Therefore, within pure unalloyed devotees, that's what we say, there's pure devotees, they may be accepted. Pure unalloyed, they're not accepting. The desire for liberation does not exist. Doesn't mean that they're not in those situations when they go back to Godhead, but it's not their intent. Thus, to remain free from the desire for mukti is anyabhilashita shunya, being devoid of any desire other than to please Sri Krishna. Because the point is that all of these, it means it's said that you, how you say? Okay, obtain a residence in the abode of Bhagavan. How is that pleasing to the Lord? You understand? We have to intellectually go through a process here. To obtain opulence equal to that of Bhagavan. How is that pleasing, directly pleasing to Krishna, the person? Yes. But it's connected to Krishna, it's transcendental. But that's the whole point of pure unalloyed bhakti, is just about Krishna's pleasure itself. It means you can go through some channels and get there, but the point is if you have to go through those channels and you have to show how it's connected to just that direct pleasing of Krishna, why not just focus on directly pleasing Krishna, and then whatever comes along with that comes. Does that make sense? No?
It's not an easy thing to understand. Because if it's offered, some say you should take it, and some say you shouldn't.
But what's the consideration of taking or not taking? You say don't take it. Why not? You understand what's going on here? We always have to think about it. So that means we're working, it's not that aspect of spontaneity. Not that we're saying we're supposed to be on that platform, it's ultimately there. But the point being is that we have to go through an intellectual thing to try to bring it from the position it is up to something that has substance that we read about that's recommended. So if it's a matter of trying to please Krishna, that's the real point. Now, if that happens to do that, you happen to be on the same planet, then it's not about being on the planet, because you can be on the planet and not be pleasing Krishna. Aristasura is coming in and making all kinds of trouble, and he's on the same planet. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is that it's about wanting to please Krishna. These things will come along with it. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let us say, okay, you go into a restaurant, okay? Now, is it a good thing to have, you want to order some food, right? Is it a good thing to have a plate, you know, or a cup? You know, what about the cutlery? And what about a table to put that on? You know, and since there's a table, do we need a chair? You see where we're going with this? But when you just go in and order the preparation, all that comes along with it. That's the whole point, is that there's no need of a separate endeavor. So when your focus is on Yavilashita Shunya, that nothing else is important other than just pleasing Krishna, and therefore the attitudes and the services and that of that, that's then where everything else will come. Does that make sense? You know, it means that you're, let's say, one's impressed with okay, what could one be impressed with? Let's say, just for example, okay, Madhu Mangal's joking that he always tries to make whatever the situation, turn it into something, you know, pleasant and happy for Krishna. Okay? So, if that's the focus, you just want to please Krishna, and that particular, you know, aspect of service is something that is desired, then you would naturally be an associate of Krishna. You would naturally be on the same planet as Krishna. You would naturally have a form that fits into that. You know, it's like, Krishna goes out, you know, he's taking the cows out, and then one of the cows stands up on the hind legs and puts their arm around Krishna's shoulder and says, yeah, a funny thing happened to me the other day when we went out to the pasturing fields. Right? It's not going to work out so good. Right? No. So, therefore, he has a form that matches, because it's matching that service. And the whole point is he has to have opulences to do that. He has to have the intelligence. You understand? So there's no focus on that at all. It's not that, oh yeah, no, but if we just focus on it, we'll get those. That's still not Anyavilashita Shunya. It means it's just Krishna. That's the uniqueness of Brajabhakti. That's what's never been given before. Is that?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's the whole point that we're trying to get down. You know, with all this volume of things, and then we get down to this, what? But it's just about Krishna. So, and it's not some secret, it's been said right from the beginning. Prabhupada's been saying this from day one. It's just that with time we start to be able to see what that means. You know? Does that make sense? And then from seeing, then you actually then taste, and then, you know, like that. It just keeps going.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? So there's other things that you should take. He said, yeah, you could take it. And then, Prahlad Maharaj is glorified because he took it. Right? Nrisimhadeva offered him whatever he wanted, liberation, opulence, anything. And since the Lord's offering it, hey, you know, I can't complain. He is the Lord and that, and I'm his servant, so therefore he took it, right? No, he said, all I want is your pure devotion. And that's why he's glorified. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so that pleases Krishna, because it's just about him. You know, it's just like, okay, let's say you have the rich kid. Now, this being a rich kid, having facilities and all those kind of things and all that, is it going to be actually difficult to get people to hang around with him?
Yeah.
to do stuff with him, to go anywhere they, you know, with him. But to find someone as an actual friend, that it doesn't matter if he has facility. They like him because of him, not because he's rich kid. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's why.
That's Braja.
Rich kids, they're always mental, whether people really like me or it's just for.
Yeah, but because in Vaikunthi he's God, it doesn't matter anyway, because they gotta like him, because, you know, who else is that great? So that's why there's a different mood in Vaikuntha. That mood of majesty is different. But here it's just who. The residents of Vrindavan, they like Krishna. It doesn't matter. He's God, he's not God. They like him, you see, at the beginning of the Krishna book. And then they come in contact with these aspects that he may be God. You know, the Supreme Person. So at first it kind of bewilders him. No, but he's Krishna, you know, like this. And then with time, they adjust to who he is, but it doesn't change the flavor at all. Does that make sense? So that's the uniqueness of it. It doesn't matter. And that's just, we're looking at the positive. Radharani points out, even if it's not a nice situation, it still doesn't matter. You know, it's like that story of Lord Vishnu had a headache. Or Krishna had a headache and whatever. And then he went around to the different people. And then they said, and so he asked Krishna, well, what can I do to get rid of your headache? And he says, I need the dust from the feet of my devotees. So when they asked different people, and they all said, no, but gopis, they said, you know, fine, take. He says, but aren't you worried of going to hell? Fine, if it gets rid of Krishna's headache, we'll be happy in hell. So we're always looking for that personal, that deep, that doesn't, this is it. That's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the really real thing. Right? The material world is not real. Vaikuntha is real. But the really real thing is Braj.
Is that translation Vastava Vastu? That
yeah, that's Vastava Vastu. Yeah. We didn't get that from the popular soft drink company. Because you can understand is that when they say that really real thing, they're talking within the temporal kind of environment. So then, because we see the other aspect of their motto to enjoy, so then you know that there's some other point there. They're not talking about the unlimited ocean of transcendental bliss or anything like that. So
they are Mishra.
Huh?
They are Mishra.
Yes, there seems to be some element of that Mishra aspect is there. It's not on the completely pure unalloyed platform. But what Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that's pure in the way. Is that okay?
Yeah.
So it's not a matter of that, is that, you know, because you say, oh, you shouldn't take it. Oh, you should take it. They'll argue with each other like that on what, but you ask them just directly, why should you take it? Okay, it's good, you take it. So why? And they might be a little stumped or, you know, like that. Because then most likely the answer won't be about Krishna's pleasure. So even though it's Vaishnava is connected to Krishna, it's just like we connect the Varnashram things. But it's not about that. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That one takes up devotional service, right? So then the first thing one does is just, you know, in the association of devotees, practices the five direct activities of devotional service. That's the focus. You know, because the secondary aspects we don't really understand or have the purity for. So, therefore, then you have that aspect is that you're performing the direct activities and you're practicing Varnashram. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, we're talking about the typical devotee here, right? Yeah. So, then that following of the Varnashram system, as they become purified from the other, then they start to see it as, instead of it, a separate thing, because it maintains the body, the mind, the social things, and then in that way one's comfortable. One can perform your service. You know, and this even includes the elements of spiritual, meaning we're not the body, we're the soul, you know, those kind of aspects like that. With time, those all start to become and we see the connection, how Krishna, everything's connected. It's all Krishna, so it's all seen as service to Krishna. So the indirect now becomes subservient to and supportive of devotion. And so in that process, those aspects that are not useful for pure devotion, those are dropped. You know, like for us, we don't do Pitri Puja and this and that. We have, you know, on one sense, as far as dropping useless things within the Vedic culture, that can be an advantage for the Mlechas and Yavanas because they didn't follow even the useful ones before, let alone the non-useless. So that hopefully they incorporate the useful ones, and then it's automatically done that they don't follow the ones that you're not supposed to, like the Pitri Puja. Right? Like that. But if you're coming from a little bit more pious background, then all these things are going on. And then you see is that it's Krishna's the origin of all, so therefore then just worshipping him, that takes care of the worship of the demigods, the worship of the Pitris, all these aspects.
Yeah.
Right? And so then one follows that aspect of the life to maintain, you know, whatever's necessary, and then to be engaged in those direct activities, because that's what you're trying to do. And of those, then the chanting in the association of devotees. Hearing Bhagavatam, associate worship, at least these aspects you're trying to focus. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So, that aspect, that prema is the main point. Prema is the goal. Because prema means your natural mood of friendliness is directed exclusively at Krishna. Right? Then that's manifest as prema.
Yeah.
Right? Then in that context, then seeing all other living entities, then you'll see that aspect of friendship. Because that's a natural quality. So directed at Krishna is prema, directed at others is friendship. Right? And then within the conditioned state, then you're going to determine between that. If they're devotees, you're friendly. They're innocent, you know, favorable, then you're going to be compassionate. And they're not, then you're, you know, how do you say? Why this one is going away?
So,
not avoid, there's that, but it's a different, it's that term where you don't care.
Indifferent.
But so that indifference means if it's need that you say hello and all this, and you do, you follow the etiquette, but there's no interest on your part to associate. But, you know, according to the etiquette, that person won't know that. But if you don't need to interact, you just don't. Why bother? There's nothing to gain. So that's the manifestation of that same quality of friendliness. So it has to be about that it's about Krishna. That's the goal. Right? All other things then fall by the wayside. That's why it says those four stages, Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. They're only useful in as much as their ability to serve pure devotion. Does that make sense? Yeah. So then the Moksha, the Vijnana Moya is how Krishna's descended, how he pervades everything, so then we can see everything connected to Krishna as a person. How all the rules and regulations are there for activities to please Krishna. And then all the artha and kama aspects, those social aspects that are there, you know, making the money and all those are just brought into that it's something that you do to maintain so you can perform service. Does that make sense? So then the consciousness is Ananda Maya, and that Bilva Mangal Thakur says those four are waiting at the door to serve. Set. Yeah. Yeah, good.
So Maharaj, actually, it seems inconceivable. You can receive a Vraja Bhakti coming from a very low background.
Yes, it seems because the background is it a primary aspect or a secondary? Secondary, so it's not actually to do with the soul. It's the situation that souls got themselves into by the consciousness they've had and acting upon that consciousness in the past. But the point is by association. You know, it's just like the touchstone. It takes things that are not of value and turns it like that. So by the association of the Vaishnavas, then we take on the natural quality of the soul that is inherently servant of Krishna. So bhakti, everyone's qualified for. Right? But when we talk about the secondary, the material, your qualification is according to your karma. You know, this idea is that, oh no, we can do whatever we want. No, you can't. You can try, please Krishna, you can do bhakti. And then if Krishna wants to do something amazing, yes. Because it's Krishna's potency. Is that? Yeah. So that's the... It's just that surrender to Krishna that is there. That every soul is qualified for. Right? Bhakti, all varnas, all ashram, everybody's qualified for that because of the nature of the soul. But other things, then yes, that's according to material qualification. Right? It's just like all the utensils in the kitchen are qualified to be involved in the cooking process for Krishna. Right? That all of them. So there's equal spiritual opportunity. But what service they do for Krishna, that's according to the nature of the utensil. That's intelligence. Right? So, in other words, the value is there, but take it up to actually the spiritual platform. Otherwise, the values will be just in Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha. Right? And if we're coming from a Western background, then, you know, how you say, Artha and Kama basically are our circles. Dharma, Moksha generally is not on the menu. You know. Yeah.
So, those devotees who have this consciousness or this outlook or this desire for these four liberations, should we re-educate them? And if having re-educated, should we just leave them alone if they don't agree to this?
No, the point is that these things, what's the problem with it? Means them having a desire for you know, one or all or any combination of the four kinds of liberation. What's the problem?
They're basing it on some kind of a material conscious concept.
Yes. So what's wrong with that?
Material.
And what's wrong with material?
They're the center.
Means, so the point is that Krishna is the center, then him being the center, what are you supposed to do with Krishna as the center?
Krishna, then prema bhakti should be enough.
Yes. But so the point is Krishna is the center, then we want to do what? Service.
Yes.
So it's about the service. Right? Someone can say, no, but I can use this in Krishna's service. That's fine. But the point is it about using that in Krishna's service, or it's about service? Yeah. Right? Because those aren't counted within the position of rati. Right? Means when we talk about rasa with Krishna, means the five kinds of rati, then we're not it's not discussed that these are angas of that. You know, it's vatsalya rati, it's not, these aren't angas of that. Does that make sense? So the shakya rati or madhurya rati, it's not part of that. Other aspects are the natural activities that they do, what inspires them and all that. It's not that I'll have, you know, be on the same planet. We never see that as the udipans. It's Krishna's form, his nature, his flute playing, his interactions with the devotees, his laughing, these are the things that are. So it's him, the person. It's the subjective aspects of Krishna. Right? So these liberation is not a subjective aspect of Krishna. It's part of him being God, yes. But then you're not dealing with him as a person. It means God's a person, of course. But it's not about him as a person, his subjectivity. So then it's just a matter of taking it farther. You want to take, but why? And then take it farther. So if you want pure devotion, why not just go for the pure devotion? Why carry all this extra baggage along with it? Is that something? Yeah. So in that way, then it's not a matter of that has to be stopped. It has to be moved forward into where it takes its natural position, because everything's emanating from Krishna. But it's just a matter of, you know, how far down it is. You know, that rock over there, in the, you know, between the bricks there that's not supposed to be there, that, you know, gets stuck in your shoe, it's also coming from Krishna. You know? So the point is you have to go back to the point where now you'll call this about Krishna's desire. You know, you say, well, if he desires, then I'll have that. Yeah, but then why focus on those? Why not just focus on Krishna's desire and pleasing that?
They have never heard of this. Max they've heard is, we'll go to Vaikuntha with Narayana, the highest thing among Indians. This concept that we are discussing is...
Yeah, but so it's, but he's a person. Why not go beyond that? That's what you see. That's what's unique in Braj. But if not, then at least if that's there, especially if they're in a particular sampradaya and that's their goal, then yes, go for it. But the point is here it's about, those things are nice, that's good for us, but how are we pleased? Then we have to be able to use that to please the Lord. So since you have to use, okay, your sarupya, you have your form, which is non-different from the Lord. So the point is that the end? Or is it about using that form in some way to please the Lord as a person? So focus on the pleasing of the Lord as a person. You don't have to focus on that you get that form. The point is to do that service, you'll have a form. So that'll come automatically. So even within their own sampradaya, they can learn to take it deeper. That's what Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the conclusions of all the sampradayas can be found very nicely within the Gaudiya Siddhanta, because it's so clearly and easily explained. It's that... Therefore, within pure unalloyed devotees, the desire for liberation doesn't exist. Thus, to remain free from the desire for mukti is anyabhilashita shunya, being devoid of any desire other than to please Sri Krishna. This is one of the tatastha lakshana, or secondary characteristics. Right? It means you don't want to be attracted by anything else. The primary is just wanting to please Krishna. Right? And so the tatastha is you don't want anything else. And so even if he has that, it still has to be connected back to the primary. So bhakti means this sarup lakshana. So always bring it back to there. Right? Vritti. 2. Jnana karmari navritam. To remain free from and uncovered by tendencies such as those for jnana and karma is another secondary characteristic of bhakti. So you're devoid of any desire and you're free from and uncovered by tendencies for this. Right? So let alone desire, it's just that you don't have the tendencies. Right? Tendency is your inclination. Desire is then you want to apply it. Right? And then perform. In the phrase jnana karmadi, the word adi means and so forth, refers to practice of astanga yoga, vairagya shankya yoga, and the occupational duties according to one's caste and creed. Okay, so then we do fall into there. So if our caste and creed is malechas and yavanas, then those particular occupational duties according to that, then they would be included in this thing. Does that make sense? It has already been explained that the favorable cultivation of activities to please Sri Krishna is called bhakti. The living entity is transcendental. Krishna is transcendental, and the tendency of unalloyed devotional service through which the living entity establishes an eternal relationship with Krishna is also transcendental. Yes. The sarup lakshana, or the intrinsic nature of bhakti, acts only when the jiva is situated in its pure state. Right? Because otherwise, if we're not situated with this sarup lakshana, then the tendency is we're going to then use these other levels, the tatastha lakshanas, which is fine. But the point is when as one's purified, then the sarup lakshana starts to come out. So that's the whole point. We get that means we're performing the service with that purpose of that. We may not be acting on it. But as we get purified, then we see that this tendency to please Krishna starts to become more and more prominent in our calculation of what we're doing, as opposed to just don't do this, don't do that.
So you're saying that we first involve in Tattvastha Lakshana, and then slowly we get to Svarupa Lakshana?
If we're talking about the means Shuddha Bhakti, then it will come like that. But there's bhakti, and our purpose is pure devotion. That's why we need to hear about it. Because like, sometimes, let's say some meeting, and all kinds of arrangements are being discussed. And, you know, for many, it'll be good. So as long as it's going along nicely, it's great. But if there's anything that they start to bring in their own conditioning, then there's a problem. Now, if you bring up, what about the connection to Krishna here? And it'll be, why aren't we discussing that? It says, that's automatic. Of course that's there. But the problem is if that's not there in the forefront of the mind, how do you see that that's going on there? Just like, let's say, you go out shopping, okay? And going out shopping, you go to buy a gift for some specific person, right? So, what keeps you on the track that you actually buy a gift for that person? Remembrance of that person. The desire to find something that they would like. So, you're looking for something specific that they like, so you go into one shop, they have it, great. If they don't, you go to another and that, or you start looking on the internet to find which store does have that kind of thing. Like that. Now, what happens if you forget about them while you're out shopping? You buy so many things. You understand? But it's not that those things that you're buying and all that aren't proper. It's just that you're not seeing it in relationship to. Does that make sense? So that's the whole thing. Is if I always remember Krishna, never forget, then that's what gives that focus. Because sometimes they say, oh, what's the trick? What do we do like this? It's just do it to please Krishna. That's the, there is no trick. It's like Prabhupada said, it's an open secret. Is that? Yeah, so when one knows that, then one endeavors for that. But if one doesn't think like that, then one won't endeavor for that. You get into your habit, and then you just do that, and you just go along and doing that. It's in connection to Krishna, it's activities that are recommended, one's purified, one's working under authority, but it'll be slower than if you are doing those things because it pleases Krishna. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. So, yeah.
Knowledge. I think that everything starts with the intent.
Intent, yes.
And if
yes.
we have the intent to please Krishna,
yes.
then automatically, even if we are not expert to the secondary thing, it's going to be it's going to live up to pure devotion.
Yes, it is. So that's why even your focus, you don't know how to engage, let's say, the secondary aspects.
Yes.
But the point is because you're trying to do things along the line of the primary, that whatever you see, you'll consider it in connection with the primary.
Yes.
So even though you don't know the technical points of engaging that secondary thing, you'll view all secondary things simply on how it connects to the primary. And if it's there, you'll see it'll be successful. Right? So that's how then you would see is that these early days, devotees would do so many wonderful things because that's how they'd look at it. Right? And naturally, as the one matures then and is purified, then you can start to use the indirect very nicely. Right? Does that make sense? So, but that's still done by keeping that primary focus on those five main activities. Okay. So then it works very nicely. But otherwise, then you just get into techniques and all that. That's all secondary. And so then the difficulty comes up is that at what point do we remember that it's supposed to be primary? When do we use the Swarup Lakshana?
Association of devotee knowledge needs to help us to remember about the primary.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. Because they're conscious that you're supposed to associate with those who are more advanced.
Yes.
So naturally their consciousness is higher, therefore it'll help you raise your consciousness. As long as it's progressive, that's all. As long as they're more advanced than you, if you're at one and they're at two, then that's good.
Yes.
You know? So you just keep going. You know, because they're also associating, so in this way everybody's progressing forward. So the system works very, very nicely. It's perfectly designed, you know, because it's Krishna, it's his energies. Does that make sense? You know. So yeah. The living entity is transcendental. Krishna is transcendental. And the tendency of unalloyed devotional service through which the living entity establishes the eternal relationship with Krishna is also transcendental. Right? So we're talking about that tendency. The Sarupa Lakshana, or the intrinsic nature of bhakti, acts only when the jiva is situated in its pure state. When the jiva is conditioned and situated in the material world along with his Sarupa, two more marginal identities are present, the gross and subtle body, right? Because one is here in one's that sarup, that you're servant of Krishna, but the problem is it gets covered by these other, the gross and subtle bodies. So we take up those identities and give up the sarup of I'm servant of Krishna. That's why if you just take I'm servant of Krishna, that automatically removes the other things. You know, we have many things, how to technically remove. No, you just have to remember you're serving the Krishna. Through the medium of these, the gross and subtle body, the jiva endeavors to fulfill his various desires while living in the material world. Therefore, when introducing someone to the concept of Shuddha Bhakti, we have to acquaint him with the concept of anyabhilashita shunya, being devoid of any desire other than the desire to please Krishna. Right? So they're talking about that's coming right from the beginning. Right, and Prabhupada talks about that. He may use very simple language. He may not use the term, but the point is this just to please Krishna. Seeing the miserable condition of the living entity in the material world, the most compassionate Lord mercifully implants the Bhakti Lata Bij in his heart. This seed is known as Shraddha or faith, and it contains within it the undeveloped manifestation of Bhava, or the first sprout of divine love for Bhagavan. So the faith already has that inherently within it. So it's just a matter of cultivating that faith. Right? And you're cultivating that by cultivating Krishna. Because it's Krishna who's given the faith. Now the gradual development of bhakti starting from its seed form of Shraddha will be explained. As soon as the seed of Shraddha is sown in the heart, immediately Bhakti Devi appears there. Right? So we may say, but then when will we ever... No, Bhakti Devi already there. Otherwise, why are there offenses? Right? If no one's there and you burp, where's the offense? Right?
Nobody burped.
Yes, it's just like the Buddhists. So they're... I guess that's why in their realm they're not offensive, right? Bhakti at the stage of Shraddha is very delicate, like a newborn baby girl. That's why it says Kamala Shraddha. Very tender, very delicate. So, you know, one can easily be distracted. Therefore, she should be carefully protected from all varieties of inauspiciousness, such as jnana, karma, yoga, attachment to material objects, dry renunciation, etc. If Shraddha is not protected, she will not develop into bhakti, but will merely assume the form of anartas. Right? Because then that faith will then turn into faith in these anartas. That will distract. The danger of disease remains until Shraddha Devi becomes free from the influence of the anartas and transforms into Nishtha by being nurtured by the affectionate mother of the association of genuine devotees and taking the medicine of bhajan. Right? So, yeah. Once she has reached the stage of Nishtha, no anartha whatsoever can easily harm her. Mm-hmm. Right? Because one is that nothing is of interest. You're fixed in the devotional process. Mm-hmm. Right? And two, even if something comes up by habit, it's not something you want to pursue. So very quickly you just move on. That's the advantage. Well, if one's below that, anarthas coming up, opportunities like that, one gets involved, one tends to get distracted. Right? So the faith goes somewhere else. The faith. So as we mentioned before, faith means that bhakti is the only thing that is going to give any benefit. Right? Less than that, we think bhakti is giving benefit, but also, you know, doing whatever else that we want to do is going to give us benefit. You know, dharma, artha, kama, moksha, any of these may give us also benefit. Right? But when the faith is, no, if I have bhakti, whether anything else is there or not, then that's perfect. That's the faith that that then the anarthas can't disturb. Right? So, there are two types of jnana. Spiritual knowledge, which is directed towards attaining mukti, and Bhagavat Tattva jnana, which arises simultaneously along with bhakti in the heart of the jiva. Right? So when we study the tattva, it's about Bhagavat Tattva jnana. It's not just knowledge to know knowledge, or knowledge to speculate with. So that's the problem, is when it's about Krishna, that's good. But when it's just that you have this knowledge, and because of that knowledge, it'll give you all kinds of benefits, then one's thinking something other than bhakti is going to benefit you. And two is it only gives benefit if you can speculate with it. Right? Because, let's say, you're an intellectual and there's a whole bunch of other intellectuals. Right? Now, if you come in and just say, this is the conclusion and that's it, how well will your social standing go amongst those intellectuals? No, you have to be able to, yes, you have to be able to speculate. So therefore, it's not going to be of any use. The first type of jnana is directly opposed to devotional service, and it is essential to stay far away from it. Some people say that bhakti arises only after the cultivation of such spiritual knowledge. But this statement is completely erroneous, for bhakti actually dries up by the cultivation of such knowledge. Right? Because here we see spiritual knowledge, and while he's used the word transcendental, here Krishna is transcendental, the living entity is transcendental, the tendency of unalloyed devotional service through which the living entity establishing eternal relationship with Krishna is also transcendental. You mentioned there, if you're just trying to understand Krishna's position, the jiva and all that, that's spiritual knowledge. Yes. When you're trying to understand your relationship, eternal relationship with Krishna and cultivating that, that's transcendental knowledge. So whether using both terms, but in different positions, then the spiritual means we know we're not the body, we're the soul. You know, we understand the Shankya, we understand all these different things. That's the spiritual knowledge. Yes. You know, if it's for the purpose of detaching ourselves from the material world. Mm-hmm. But it only becomes bhakti when it's actually in line with the Bhagavad Tattva jnana, establishing our relationship with Krishna. So we have to be even very careful there. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. On the other hand, the tattva jnana concerning the mutual relationship between the Ishwar, the jiva, and maya, which arises in the heart of the jiva through faithful cultivation of devotional activities, is helpful for this bhakti. This means you have to be able to see chit, achit, Ishwar, and in the context of achinta, beta, beta, tattva. That knowledge, that's useful. That will take you beyond. This knowledge is called Ahaituka jnana, or knowledge which is devoid of ulterior motive. Right? Because it's not that by this knowledge then I'll get money, or I'll get, you know, liberation, or I'll get respect, or, you know. Śrīla Gosvāmī says in Śrīmad Bhāgavatam, by rendering devotional service under the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires causeless knowledge and detachment from the world. Right? So the benefits of jnana yoga are coming anyway by performing karma. Right? So when you're performing karma yoga, the benefits you'll get from jnana yoga are already there. But unless you're situated in jnana yoga, you won't get those benefits from jnana yoga. Does that make sense? In other words, you have to have a certain amount of knowledge and detachment to be able to practice jnana yoga. So you can't start there. But by performing karma yoga, then you get knowledge and detachment. Right? So here when we're saying rendering devotional service, means the bhakti itself gives those things. So when we're performing them in connection with that, that's why it comes. Right? But the point is that it has to be about Krishna. If it's for some other ulterior motive, for material benefit or liberation, then that's going to be detrimental. Now, by carefully reviewing all the previous statements, we can understand that to remain uncovered by jnana, karma, and so forth, which means accepting them as subservient entities, and engaged in the favorable cultivation of activities meant to please Sri Krishna, which are devoid of any other desire, is called Uttama Bhakti. So we always have to have that in the forefront, and that's what we have to be trying to attain.
Yes.
Right? Does that make sense? It's not that, yeah, we heard about it. You know, it's not like that. Yes, when I was 12, I read the whole Bhagavad Gita. Mm-hmm. Like that. Nice. Like that. But, yeah. Bhakti is the only means by which jiva can obtain transcendental bliss. Besides bhakti, all other methods are external. Right? Because bhakti is in the core of the heart of the living entity. So if he's only getting to the level of the spiritual platform, that's still external to him. Because you're situated on the Brahman platform, that's external to you. Because what's your relationship with Brahman? You're situated there, but what's the relationship? So it's external. Because you can't have bhakti for Brahman. Right? Does that make sense? So the point is the Brahman is there. Brahman is coming from Krishna. Right? So therefore, then you have a relationship with Krishna. That's the inherent nature of the jiva. That's internal. So only pure bhakti is actually internal. Everything else is external. Right? So mixed devotional service means it's pure bhakti with something else. So we can say, oh, but mixed then we'll never have... No. Pure bhakti is there. So those activities that are done pure, those work. And the ones that are mixed, that's the place where, you know, the other aspects will come. Does that make sense? So you're going to get those benefits. It's just that you're trying to make it where it's exclusively just pure devotion. When it is, then it's called pure devotion, not mixed devotional service. Besides bhakti, all other methods are external. With the assistance of bhakti, sometimes karma is identified as Aropya Siddhi Bhakti, or endeavors which are indirectly attributed with the quality of devotion. And sometimes jnana is identified as Sangha Siddha Bhakti, or endeavors associated with or favorable to the cultivation of devotion. Right? So Aropya Siddhi Bhakti. So you take aropya, means your desires, what's valuable to you, and then you project that within to the context of devotional service. Yes, that would be, yeah. Both of these are misra. It's just one is karma misra, one is jnana misra, but they're just giving the what technically goes on, because it's aropya siddhi bhakti. So by doing that, always in contact with bhakti, then that bhakti then purifies, and then that aropya comes to that platform where then it just takes on devotional service. Right? But if our emphasis is too much on the aropya part and not on the bhakti part, then it will be very slow. Right? It won't come to the siddhi. Right? And the other one we see is by sangha siddhi, we associating and therefore discussing the topics of Krishna. Then in that we may be focusing on the technical aspects, the jnana aspects, but it has to always be is that that aspect of bhakti is there. But it's about cultivating that primary, not just the second. Just like the aropya, it has to be about cultivating the primary, not the secondary. You're using the secondary, but it's about cultivating the primary. But they can never be accepted as sarup siddha bhakti, or bhakti in its constitutional perfection state, right? So they're methods that are used until we get to that platform of pure devotion. Right? That's the whole, that's the perfection of bhakti, is that it is what then we are establishing by Krishna's grace, then has Shraddha, then it develops in that up through. So it's designed for us in our conditioned state. Because in the spiritual world, they don't need to use these levels. It's for us. So we shouldn't be worried that it won't work on us, or I'm so sinful it won't work on us. No, it'll always work. If you follow the process, surrender to the devotees, follow the acharyas, you know, like that, the instructions, try to avoid the offenses, and then it works nice. Sarup Siddha Bhakti is Kaitava Shunya, or free from any deceit and full of unalloyed bliss by nature, meaning that it's devoid of any of the desires for heavenly enjoyment or attaining liberation. Oh, my dear Vaishnavas, by your constitutional position, you are attracted to Sarup Siddha Bhakti and have no taste for Aropa Siddhi Bhakti or Sangha Siddha Bhakti. Although these two types of devotion are not actually bhakti by their constitution, some people call them bhakti, right? So that's where you see is that if we're being, encouraging, we'll say they're within bhakti. You know, if someone's got attitude, then we'll point out they're not. Right? That's how it works. Yeah. In fact, they are not bhakti, but bhakti abhasra, the semblance of real bhakti. If by some good fortune, through the practice of bhakti abhash, one develops shraddha for the true nature of bhakti, then only such practice transforms into shuddha bhakti. Right? So that means you need that faith in pure devotional service for it to transform into that. Right? We remember we were saying before is that that is being explained that when you hear, you try to remove the doubts. Right? But those doubts being removed, then you have to accept it. Accepting it, now you can actually contemplate it and practice it. Right? So that's the here is that. So one develops. So if by some good fortune through the practice of bhakti abhash, one develops shraddha for the true nature. So one has to have that faith in that true nature of bhakti, even if we're dealing with bhakti abhash. Right. So that's the whole point is that if we have that faith, then we'll see very quickly it will come. But if we're not, we're distracted by all the external aspects, then it'll just make it slower. It will come, but you know, just why not sooner than later?
To study deeply means we are supposed to develop this manala process.
Yes.
Understand and apply and be convinced.
Yes. We're trying to, because we accept it. We may not fully understand it, but we accept it. It's enough. In other words, doubts have been cleared where we accept it. Then we try to contemplate it and practice it. By that, we'll get an understanding. Then, by that understanding, by that being consistent, that will give us realization. Then we can function on that platform. But first, there must be that acceptance of it. Right, so as long as then we say this. Now, these points, we're making them very strongly, and we see is that we're catching a glimmer there, right? But if we rewind back some years, then as soon as we say that, oh, that's all right, but what about our practical life? That means that hasn't been accepted yet.
Yes.
Yeah, so that aspect then means that it hasn't been accepted. So when it is accepted, that's when that aspect becomes dynamic. But the other is, if you're in the association of devotees doing bona fide things, you will advance. But when one's aware of this point, then it advances quicker. Yes?
So can we say that acceptance happens on two levels? One is intellectual acceptance, and then from the mind, it also has to be accepted. Because as you mentioned, some people intellectually, they accepted the process or whatever it is.
Yes,
but
yes.
Then after some time, you poke them and the whole thing, you know,
yes,
comes
but
out.
But that's why then they have to practice it, contemplate it and practice it. So if they do that, they intellectually accept it, then they start to practice it and contemplate, then they will try to improve the quality of it. That's where then those pokeables can be dealt with. But if they don't, then they just sit there in the background.
Yeah, just sweep it under the rug.
Yeah. And somehow or another, that only works specifically with Swedes. That is their process. So if you're not Swedish, practicing the culture, then you have to deal with it.
Yeah.
I would expect they have to deal with it also. But maybe just the weather's cold enough that it doesn't, you know, come out and you don't get any bad smell or something. I'm not sure, but whatever it is, it's their process. Right. So the, if your manana means you're actually contemplating, so that's why it has to go through there. Otherwise, if it doesn't get to manana, there will be no nididhyasana. Because nididhyasana means you're fixed in it. Like in yoga, nididhyasana means you're fixed in the meditation. Right? And then that comes to samadhi. So you only are fixed in it if it's a value. It's only a value if you've realized. You only realize that if you've understood. You only understood if you've contemplated and practiced it. And you only contemplate and practice if you've accepted it. Right? And you accepted it because you've heard. Yes.
This definition given by Jiva Goswami for the Aropa Siddha and Chanda Siddha, Aropa means it's projection. So the goal is not bhakti, it's just practicing the external form of bhakti.
Right.
His goal is something else. Then he improves the next stage where Sangha Siddha is performing devotional service. He wants devotional goals, but he's cultivating the karma and jnana also. That's why
Sangha. Oh, so the jnana can also be in the Sangha city.
Yeah.
Okay.
Even the karma also, but your goal is not something else. You want devotional service also, but you want this also, right?
Yes, together. Yeah, because the one you project. Because we can easily get distracted because we get involved in our day-to-day life and our activities and organizing it and all the different things that come up. So we can be very easily just projecting on that as we're doing the activities, but we're forgetting why we're doing them. So then when obstacles come up and that, we get frustrated and that, and then people, you know, step back from those services because it's just so frustrating and no one's interested, no one's cooperating, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Because you're forgetting what it is. With Sangha, you'll stay in the association. Yes, but you have to have it that the goal is pure bhakti. So if you're in association, so Prabhupada's written in association, the Sangha. So even if it was in Aropia, then one will start to hear about it and start to mention, and then you start to progress. So, yeah. If by some good fortune through the practice of bhakti abhasha one develops shraddha for the true nature of bhakti, then only such practice transforms into shuddha bhakti. But this does not happen easily because by the practice of bhakti abhasha there exists every possibility of remaining bereft of shuddha bhakti. Therefore, all scriptures instruct us to follow sarup siddha bhakti. So pure devotional. So that's why we always talk about it. Right? We generally always, you know, but, and then try to bring in the Aropya Siddha Bhakti. Right? The conclusion is that Sri Krishna is the complete all-pervading consciousness who always possesses all potencies, and the Jiva is the infinitesimal conscious entity who is likened to a single particle of a light situated within a ray of the unlimited spiritual sun. The natural and unadulterated endeavor of the infinitesimal conscious entity towards the complete consciousness is called bhakti. Right? Because we saw before is that what was it being compared is that these other aspects are the sun. But we have to get out of the shade and just out of that because the shade comes if rays are there, then it's light. And if rays aren't there, then there's shade. Right? But in the interior of the sun, it's always bright. So that's then given as the internal potency. That's where the sun god sits. So then Krishna sits in his own abode with his internal potency. So when we make it that it's about Krishna, then we switch from just being a particle of a light situated in the unlimited spiritual sky to about Krishna as a person and acting within that concept. That's the transcendental relationship. It goes beyond the spiritual. So that's the thing. Transcendental is beyond spiritual. Transcendental includes spiritual, but it's beyond spiritual. Right? In this context, when you use the two. The natural and unadulterated endeavor of the infinitesimal conscious entity towards the complete consciousness is called bhakti. The jiva's persistence towards anyavilashita, acting to fulfill desires under them, the desires to please Sri Krishna. Jnana and karma is called acquiring material designation. We should understand that the natural inherent endeavor of the jiva can only mean the favorable cultivation of activities to please Sri Krishna. That's the inherent endeavor. It's only that. Does that make sense? And then we focus on those direct activities, and then naturally we just come to the position where we're acting to please the Lord. Right? And these other aspects become subservient too. Right? In the beginning, they're not. They're important along with. So we're doing bhakti, we're doing those things. But at some point, if we keep doing the direct activities, as Lord Chaitanya pointed out, they're so powerful that they'll overpower even the endeavors that we have on the side in the indirect activities. And then with time, those indirect activities will start to become subservient to bhakti. Then one doesn't have these, everything is just seen in connection to Krishna. Okay, chapter 1, characteristics of pure devotional service. 1-1, 13 through 15. Sri Bhagavatasya Tritiyash Skande Cha, 3:29, 12-13. Avyava hita sa bhakti purushottame. Verse 13, shlokasya sharshti samipya sarupyai katvam apyuta diyamanam na grinanti vina mat sevanam jnana. 14, sa eva bhakti yoga kya at yantika udahrita. It's interesting that within his shloka, he's put the verse from the Bhagavatam that then references that it's the Bhagavatam there, and then continues the verse like that. Very interesting. Oops, Hare Krishna. This is also stated in the third canto. These are the characteristics of transcendental loving service to Purushottama, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is without other desires, and it is not contaminated by karma or jnana. In this type of bhakti, my devotees do not accept shalokya, sharshti, sarupya, samipya, or oneness with me, even if I offer these liberations in preference to serving me. This is called bhakti yoga, and is declared as the highest object of human pursuit. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:29, 12-13. So it's part of bhakti. It's a practice of bhakti that even if Krishna himself personally offers you these, you don't take them. So for those who say, no, you know, do we take or not take, Krishna here in the 3:29, 12-13 says, bhakti means you don't take them.
Kapila.
Srila Prabhupada writes in NOD. In Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 29th chapter, verses 12 and 13, Srila Kapiladeva, while instructing his mother, has given the following characteristics of pure devotional service. My dear mother, those who are my pure devotees and who have no desire for material benefit or philosophical speculation have their minds so much engaged in my service that they are never interested in asking me for anything except to be engaged in that service. They do not even beg to live in my abode with me. So it's interesting because nectar, you know, because here in Nectar Devotion, it's giving those aspects. That previously, istagosti meant sitting down, you know, together and studying scripture, especially like Nectar Devotion. So it was like our temple is every Ekadasi, then you had classes, you went through and just discussions on that. But with time, it's the ghosty meant management meetings. Just the temple president telling you what he wants you to do. Like that. So then the problem comes, we're taking it just for granted that's there, but then the problem is then these points, because you see is that this is right in chapter 1 where Prabhupada's pointing that out. And in the introduction, pointing out what's being... So the first thing is being pointed out, as Jiva Goswami mentioned, is Uttama Bhakti. That's the first thing to be discussed. Understanding that, then we can discuss things like how to engage Varnashram in Krishna's service and Vaidhi Bhakti and all those. Like we see, Vaidhi Bhakti comes along in the fifth chapter. the fifth, no, sixth chapter. So before that, it's pointing out the characteristics of pure devotional service, different aspects of that. So once that's clear, then you have the context in which to engage the other activities. Does that make sense? Yes.
The standard is pure bhakti.
The standard is pure bhakti, because that's what pleases Krishna. That's what attracts Krishna. So in other words, Krishna is attracted by anyone who's doing devotional service that's coming in the bona fide line. But what he's attracted to by their service is that little bit of pure devotion that's there. Because when we say it's mixed, it's there is pure devotion. It just happens to be mixed with other aspects. So that pure devotional aspect, that's what attracts Krishna. So it may be very small, but Krishna's attracted. So the idea is that one's trying to attract Krishna 24 hours a day, consistently. That's the idea. That's pleasing to Krishna. Right? Does that make sense? How long does Krishna sit in your heart? How much time in the day? Right? You know, is he a 9-to-5, you know, man? Or like that? Right, you know, after, because getting up in the morning and whether you take a bath or not, brush your teeth or not, what you wear or not, and what you eat for breakfast, he doesn't want to know about. So after that, after you've done all that, then 9 o'clock he checks in. Okay? And generally you'll only have a sandwich and all that, and so it's not so bad and all that. And then at 5 o'clock he checks out, because then you go home and then it's, you know, all kinds of weird stuff, right? He's there 24 hours. So that's the whole idea. So we are therefore in that attitude of pure devotion 24 hours. That attracts his attention fully. Otherwise, he just attracted for that little bit. And then he sits and waits until the next, you know. So, yeah. Yes.
The difficulty with this kind of presentation is that it sounds like selfish, you know, we want those kind of liberation, you know, different kinds of liberation. So then devotees often ask the question, we reject, although we reject because, you know, it's written in the book, otherwise we wouldn't mind, I mean, honestly.
Right. But the thing is how do they know about them? It's only because of the book. Otherwise, before, you know, I mean, did they hear about the four kinds of, you know, liberations because it was written on the backs of a box of bagels or something like that? Or?
No.
Oh, yeah.
But they also know that the other sampradayas, they don't reject that. So that there's like tension, you know, why we reject and they don't. And, you know.
There is the thing, but the only problem is in their club to enter, you have to be human. Well, for they don't say even a dog can take part. Though they do know what happens, but there's a good chance they won't accept. Like, let's say the junior in the Pejor Mat, he went to America and was preaching there. And you know how every 14 years, then each mat comes around, and for 2 years, then they take care of the worship in the Krishna mat. Yes. So their time came around. He came back from America to assist. When he came back, the other mat heads and pandits insisted that he go through a prayaschitta ritual to purify himself, because he went to the west. Otherwise, he can't enter the Krishna mat and do the worship.
What's the prayaschitta?
It's just because the Vedas say that if you cross the ocean, you become impure. Right?
Cross it back, you become pure again?
Only if you go back backwards. So the problem is the planes, you have to sit forward and all that. You know, they're not like the trains where you can actually ride backwards. You know, so that's why when you go out from, let's say, if you're in one place and you ride the train out, go forward. But when you come back, come back backwards. You know, so
yeah, actually, sometimes go backwards.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's there. But just still, you have to get your seat right. Right? So they demanded that. He couldn't go into the mutt and do the worship. They wouldn't accept. So he just got on a plane and went back to America. Because his point is, I'm preaching for Madhvacharya. If you're preaching the glories of the Lord, that's purifying. So how can you say I'm impure? But they were stuck in this kind of thing. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya called them Tattvavadis. Right? And one may ask, well, but where did he get this nice understanding and all that? He got it from Srila Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita as it is. Right? Because Prabhupada does bring it up. He mentions that point. And so then that's the difficulty. So now, in other words, if they've come from anywhere else, basically, other than, in other words, do they speak Tulu? If they do, go for it. If you don't, there's a good chance you're never going to get very far anyway. Trees are a little bit more broad, but then the amount of ritual and technical things and this and that, you know, because if we're saying all these other things, then there's a good chance that they're not so technical, right? Because if they are technical, they're not going to worry about it. But if they're scholarly but not technical, then there's a problem. And if they're scholarly and technical, they'll still have the same problem. So the thing is unless they can follow Varnashram, because Varnashram is part of their process. For them, the aspect of Dasyam means practicing Varnashram for serving the Lord. That's why Ramananda Roy brings that up as the first point. Because that's where the Sri's Madhvas, that's for them, that's how they define Dasyam. Right? Because otherwise, how do you define your service? It's defined by the Varnashram. And so are they following Varnashram? So then how are they going to get into those lines? You know what I'm saying? They probably never heard of Vishnu Swamis and those guys, the Kumaras. Who's ever met them? You know what I'm saying? And what's your name? You know, the Nimbarkas, they're quite Vairagis. You know, it means that they're the Copans and Ashes and long hair kind of guys living in huts in the middle of winter in Braj. You know, so that's probably not going to roll either. So they might as well stick to what we've got. It was designed for them. Like that. You know, so, yeah. Yes.
Is it that for them it takes many lifetimes also?
Also, yeah. There's also the point in the Madhvas, then they go through a process that takes 14 lifetimes to get back to Godhead. Trees then will say you can do it in one. But then you have to be human. So it's a problem. You know, so we're the only ones that, you know, papi tapi jato chilo hari namer udarilo. That's it. Tar shaki jagai matai. Right. So if they can do it, we can do it. Right. So. Yeah. There are five kinds of liberation, namely to become one with the Lord, to live with the Supreme Lord on the same planet, to have the same features as the Lord, to enjoy the same opulences as the Lord, and to live as a companion of the Lord. A devotee, what to speak of rejecting material sense gratification, does not even want any of the five kinds of liberation. He is satisfied simply by discharging loving service to the Lord. That is the characteristic of pure devotion. Right? So that's just the characteristic of pure devotion. It's the most pleasing to Krishna. So if they're actually interested in pleasing themselves, then the only way to get really pleased is to please Krishna. So this pleases Krishna, so might as well go for it. Well, yeah. Srila Jiva Goswami writes in his commentary, in this verse, the word aituki, it means ahaituki, without cause, means anyavilashita shunya, and the word avyavahita, not separated, means jnana karmadya navritam, right? So before is that, also in that verse in the Narada Pancharatra, they showed also what words are connected. So here in this verse, again, he's showing that. Because you're talking pure devotion, characteristics. So then you have to establish it has to be based on this principle. The bhakti mentioned here is bhava rupa bhakti, footnote 1. That is because the previous lines of the Bhagavatam describe that one's desires flow to the Lord like the Ganga. Quote, just as the water of the Ganges flows naturally down towards the ocean, such devotional ecstasy, uninterrupted by any material condition, flows towards the Supreme Lord. Right? So then this is Bhava Rupa Bhakti. It just has that natural spontaneity. So that's the stance. So if not, so we understand this is a good thing. So trying to attain that, what do we do? Therefore, we follow the sadhana bhakti to get to that bhava rupa bhakti. Right? Because that's the point. Sadhana will bring you to bhava. Bhava will bring you to prema. So if our goal is prema, we have to start with sadhana. Right? However, the undeviating active form, cheshta rupa, of this bhakti is also included. Right? So it's not just that the mood, we're engaged in activities for. Right? There's no cause, we're separated from no karma, no jnana, no other ideas. But those negatives, those are the secondary, but there must be the aspect where you're actually applying it. Right? Like that. Its nature of being free of other desires, ahaituki, is illustrated with the rejection of shalokya, etc. in verse 14. The word yasyam, in which type of bhakti, should be understood to precede the statement of verse 13, so it is connected with the previous sentence. The word atyantika means the highest object of human pursuit. Right? So the highest object means it has to be pure bhakti. Right? Because humans are meant to elevate themselves to God realization, and that God realization, pure bhakti, is the best. Right? Because pure bhakti means it's about the person. 1.1.16. The description of the excellence of the devotee in the above verse amounts to describing the characteristics of bhakti by revealing its purity. Vriti. Srila Jiva Goswami points out that in verse 10, it was said that the qualities of bhakti will be discussed in this chapter to show bhakti's supreme position. The next verse mentions those unique characteristics of bhakti in brief. Right? He said they would be, he was talking about the devotee and then bhakti, and here it mentions about bhakti, but it also includes the devotee, because if this is bhakti, that means the devotee's qualities are included. Does that make sense? Yeah. 1.1.17. Kleshagni Shubada Moksha Laguta Krit Sudurlabha Sundarananda Vishveshatma Sri Krishna Karshati Cha Sa. The unique characteristics of bhakti are its ability to destroy suffering, its bestowal of auspiciousness, its disregard for liberation, its rarity of attainment, its manifestation of concentrated bliss, and its ability to attract Krishna. Srila Prabhupada. In the above statement by Kapiladeva from Srimad Bhagavatam, the actual position of a pure devotee is described, and the primary characteristics of devotional service are also defined. Further characteristics of devotional service are described by Rupa Goswami with evidences from different scriptures. He states that there are six characteristics of pure devotional service, which are as follows. 1. Pure devotional service brings immediate relief from all kinds of material distress. 2. Pure devotional service is the beginning of all auspiciousness. 3. Pure devotional service automatically puts one in transcendental pleasure. 4. Pure devotional service is rarely achieved. 5. Those in pure devotional service deride even the conception of liberation. 6. Pure devotional service is the only means to attract Krishna. Yes, so these that we say, I think in the Madhurya Kadambini, then there's a focus on this verse. It's one of the ones, that the previous one, on pure devotional service, and on this verse. Krishna is all attractive, but pure devotional service attracts even him. This means that pure devotional service is even transcendentally stronger than Krishna himself, because it is Krishna's internal potency. Vriti. Now it will be discussed the first characteristic of pure devotional service, kleshagni. Pure devotional service brings immediate relief from all kinds of material distress. Right, so he is the one that attracts. I think Krishna Prabhupada will give the example of Krishna's Madan Mohan, but she's Madan Mohan Mohini. Right? Like that.
In Madhvacharya's Nakastuti, first loka, he says that the only thing that can compare Narayan is with the 8 relationships that one can have with Narayan.
Oh, okay.
And it's devotional service.
Yes, devotional. So the relationships you can have. Yes, okay, nice. 1:1, 18 through 19. The first topic, bhakti's ability to destroy all suffering, will be discussed. Suffering is threefold: sinful reaction, the seed of sin, and ignorance. First, sinful reactions will be discussed. There are two types of sinful reactions: effects of sinful acts, effects which will be experienced in future lives, aprarabdham, and effects which are to be experienced in this lifetime, prarabdham. Right? So basically you can say is, you have sinful reaction, the seed of sin, and ignorance. So that means there's the stuff that you're going to experience now, or experience it, and there's things that will be experienced in the future. Right? So that means in the future, that means it's still growing to the point. The ones that are now are the ones you're getting the benefit from. Right? Srila Prabhupada. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says that one should surrender unto Him, giving up all other engagements. The Lord also gives His word there that He will protect surrendered soul from the reactions of all sinful activities. Srila Rupa Goswami says that the distress from sinful activities are due both to the sins themselves and to sins committed in our past lives. Generally, one commits sinful activities due to ignorance. But ignorance is no excuse for evading the reaction, sinful activities. Sinful activities are of two kinds: those which are mature and those which are not mature. Right? So mature means now, not mature means later. The sinful activities for which you are suffering at the present moment are called mature. The many sinful activities stored within us for which we have not yet suffered are considered immature. For example, a man may have committed criminal acts but not yet been arrested for them. Now, as soon as he is detected, arrest is awaiting him. Similarly, for some of our sinful activities, we are awaiting distresses in the future. And for others, which are mature, we are suffering at the present moment. So you can make it into these two broad categories. Within there, then you'll have your subdivisions, right? In this way, there's a chain of sinful activities and their concomitant distresses. And the conditioned soul is suffering life after life due to these sins. He is suffering in the present life the results of sinful activities from his past life, and he is meanwhile creating further sufferings for his future life. Mature sinful activities are exhibited if one is suffering from some chronic disease, if one is suffering from some legal implication, if one is born in a low and degraded family, or if one is uneducated or very ugly. Right? So this is how these are the ways in which they manifest. So you can understand you're coming from a sinful position because these come up. Does that make sense? Like you see some people, they never have these problems. And other people, then they have so many of these problems. all of these problems. Well, at least you know we're good at something, right? You know, yes. Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Samaveta Bhaktivinoda Ki Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandini.